الله الرحمن الرحيم ومكروا ومكر الله والله خير الماكرين. This CD utilizes some of the facts mentioned in a seminar conducted by Hujjatul Islam Sayyid Jawad Nakhvi. It is not an exact translation or copy of the seminar and does utilize other sources as well. In the day and age where the mainstream media is playing a critical role in the psychological warfare, it is important for us to get our facts from accurate sources. The Islamic Revolution in Iran was predicted by our Imams alayhi salam and has been in our books for many hundreds of years. For example, in Biharun Alwar, volume 60, page 216, hadith number 37, it has been referred to by Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam. A man from among the inhabitants of Qum will invite people towards truth. With him will gather a nation more harder in their resolve than iron. Even the fiercest of winds will not shake them. They will not be afraid of war, nor will they behave cowardly. They will only trust God, and good end is for those who fear God. Imam Jafar Sadiq alayhi salam said, "Then knowledge will appear from a city that is called Qum, and it will become a treasure of knowledge and excellence, until no one on the surface of earth will remain deprived of religion, not even the women in wail, and this situation will be near to the appearance of Al-Qa'im." There are many other hadith by Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam and our Imams alayhi salam that pointed to this time. In the 1300 plus years after Imam Ali alayhi salam, this is the first time when a government and its system is based on the teachings of Ahl-e Bayt alayhi salam. It has never happened in the history after Imam Ali alayhi salam that the resources of an entire government are spent on the spread of the teachings of Ahl-e Bayt alayhi salam. Thousands of books that were inaccessible have been printed in tens of languages. Tens of thousands of people from 95 plus countries are studying in Qom, and billions of dollars are being spent to research, collect, translate, digitize, and propagate the message of Ahl-e Bayt alayhi salam. The 12 June presidential elections in Iran and the consequential circumstances need interpretation and analysis. A couple of weeks before the elections, local and international media polls clearly showed that President Ahmadinejad was expected to get 60% plus of the vote. When the enemies of the revolution realized that despite their concerted efforts, they cannot change the minds of the Iranian nation, they tried to steal the election through a propaganda campaign. Even Mr. Karoubi, who got 300,000 out of the 40 million votes cast in the elections, leveled baseless accusations of election fraud against President Ahmadinejad, who got 24 million votes. Many of us have learned about these events through BBC and CNN, which are the tools of the same forces that tried to bring a velvet revolution in Iran. According to Ehud Barak, who has been a defense minister and prime minister of Israel, the re-election of President Ahmadinejad is the worst news he has heard since he was born. It is necessary for us to know what really took place in Iran, what was planned by the enemies of the revolution, what is the current situation, and what is our responsibility under these circumstances. The Islamic Revolution is now 30 years old, which means the Islamic democratic system, or the system of Vilayat and Vilayat-e-Faqih, has been established and maintained in Iran for over 30 years now. Since the revolution in February 1979, 23 parliamentary and presidential elections have taken place in Iran. During all of these years, more than 30 major attempts have been made to destabilize the revolution. Any one of these would have been enough to eradicate any other system in the world, but by the grace of Allah, the revolution continues to grow and become stronger. Before we look at the current attempt, let us briefly review 10 of the many attempts that have been made in the past so we can appreciate the tenacity and resilience of the revolution. The first attempt to destroy the revolution was made by the Munafiq Abul Hasan Bani Sadr, who was the first elected president after the revolution. He and his team tried to deviate the revolution from its course using all resources at their disposal. The losses incurred during this first struggle were high, but by the grace of Allah, the revolution survived through this extremely difficult period. The second weapon used against the revolution was eradication of its leadership through terrorism. These terrorists martyred the individuals that were the foundation and pillars of the revolution, including Ayatollah Murtaza Mutahhari and Ayatollah Beheshti. They even martyred President Rajai, Prime Minister Bahunar, and a significant majority of the parliament and many other leaders and personalities. Any other system in the world could not have survived this ruthless assault on the core leadership. Amongst the groups committing these acts of terror was an organization called Mujahideen-e-Khalq, referred to in Iran as the Munafiqeen-e-Khalq. Masood Rizai was the head of this group at that time. They caused significant damage to the revolution, but failed to achieve their overall objective. This group also played an important role in the current crisis. After failing in the first two attempts, the Western powers led by the United States of America and Britain, along with the entire Arab world and Russia, imposed an eight-year war on Iran through Saddam Hussein. Donald Rumsfeld visited Iraq during this time. USA officially offered a $5 billion credit to Iraq, and many other nations worked behind the scenes to support Saddam in every way possible. This was an extremely barbaric assault, and one that the enemies felt was guaranteed to finish off the Islamic Revolution, which was in its infancy. However, although more than 200,000 Iranians gave their lives, the revolution survived this extremely tough situation. The fourth crisis to eradicate the revolution was imposition of economical and political sanctions, which would have been devastating for any other nation. These sanctions continue till today and prohibit countries from selling weapons, including barbed wire fences, aircraft parts, and many other items to Iran. However, these sanctions have had exactly the opposite impact and have enabled Iran to become independent. Iran is one of the only developing nations in the world to launch a satellite and have advanced weaponry systems developed completely in their own country. The fifth crisis, which was initiated at the beginning of the revolution itself, was instigation of communal differences. Iran is a diverse nation with many ethnicities, including Persians, Turks, Kurds, Baloch, and Turkmenists. Various attempts have been made to cause internal strife and civil war by highlighting the communal differences between these communities. These ideas were tried again during the current elections. The sixth attempt against the revolution was made by pitting the Sunni minority against the Shia majority. The founder of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini Rahmatullah Alayh, categorically stated that anyone trying to sow discord between Shias and Sunnis is neither a Shia nor a Sunni. The seventh attempt was of a different nature and type, but was equally damaging as any other attempt. It has been named by the supreme leader of the Islamic Revolution as the cultural assault on Tahajjum-e-Farang. This was an organized and heavily funded cultural attack against the revolution, which was so severe and intense that it would have culturally perished any other nation. The aggression and severity of this continuous attack has caused significant damage that you can witness on the streets of Tehran even today. An example of this attack is as follows. A woman who was dressed in a very revealing manner was arrested in Tehran on suspicion of prostitution. Upon further investigation, it was revealed that the woman was not a prostitute, but that she was getting $100 a week for roaming in the market in a revealing dress. $100 a week is a very significant amount in a nation where a loaf of bread costs just 2 cents. An entire group of women, which were part of this gang funded by outside forces, was arrested and dismantled. This is just one of the many examples and attempts to culturally weaken the revolution. The eighth crisis was the eight-year presidential term of Mr. Khatami, where the roots of revolutions were attacked by a president who declared in his presidential speech that when freedom and religion are at odds with each other, then the nation should leave religion and choose freedom. His brother announced that the biggest problem that the Iranian nation face is their adherence to religion. By the grace of Allah, The Islamic revolution passed through this crisis as well. The ninth attempt, which the enemies have always kept as a hanging sword, is the threat of a military attack. Many Zionist and Western leaders have threatened Iran with military action. According to Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh, if they had the courage to attack, then they would have done several attacks by now. The reason that they have not attacked is only because it is beyond their abilities. Finally, let's discuss the 10th crisis, which we can call the attempt to instigate a velvet revolution in Iran. What is a velvet revolution? The term velvet revolution was introduced on the political stage approximately 3 decades ago. It is also called the colorful revolution or soft revolution. This conspiratorial methodology has been successful in multiple countries and was applied to its letter and spirit in the recent elections in Iran. The word was introduced to the term velvet revolution in Czechoslovakia, which is a strategic center of the new Europe. This term was used by its president, Vaclav Havel, who in 1989 also became the president of Serbia. Velvet revolution entails a change in power with minimal or no bloodshed. It is a term used to bring about a regime change without attacking a country militarily. It has also been termed as a colorful revolution because in this methodology of regime change, color plays a significant role and color has been used in all the places where this revolution took place or was initiated. The velvet revolution methodology was applied successfully in Czechoslovakia in 1989 and in Serbia in 1997 and in 2000. However, arguably the most significant application of this conspiracy was applied in Georgia in 2003, where Edward Shevardnadze, who was the ex-foreign minister of Soviet Union and the first president of Georgia, was thrown away from power and Saakashvili was put into power. In 2004, the same method was applied in Ukraine successfully and in Kazakhstan in 2005. Although some bloodshed did happen in Kazakhstan, overall the intelligence agencies in the West and the Zionist capital considered this methodology to be an extremely effective way for a regime change without a direct military attack. This methodology is applied to the regimes which are not subservient to the wishes of the United States of America. Regimes who were under the influence of Russia and China were replaced successfully by those who were obedient to the USA. Although Vaclav Havel of Czechoslovakia can be credited with popularizing the terminology of Velvet Revolution, the core idea and theory was developed by Jean Sharp, who is an American doctor and professor and the founder and Senate member of Albert Einstein Institute. The Albert Einstein Institute is a think tank in America that carries out global strategic studies and surveys. It then works out plans for every country. Jean Sharp has written a number of famous books, including The Politics of Nonviolent Action, and in 1993 he wrote a book called From Dictatorship to Democracy, which was translated in more than 30 languages and is available for free. Generally, books are printed in their original language, and after becoming famous, they are translated to other languages after many years. However, in this case, the book was translated very quickly to tens of languages and distributed across the world, including China and Iran. Professor Jean Sharp has expressed the complete theory of the Velvet Revolution in 10 chapters and has introduced 198 types of practical techniques. This book is formally taught to opposition groups that are used to bring about regime change in unfriendly countries. The book was published in 1993 and the elections in Iran took place in June 2009. However, 16 years after the publishing of the book, many of the 198 techniques described in the book were applied exactly in Tehran. After the failure of previous tactics like war, sanctions, pressure and terrorism, the enemies of the revolution tried to instigate the Velvet Revolution in Iran by following the teachings of Jean Sharp. By the grace of Allah, they have not only been defeated, but many of their agents who were working to cut the roots of the revolution have been exposed. Inshallah, the revolution will become even stronger after this crisis. A Velvet Revolution is initiated during the time of an election. The theory requires the environment of the election for its execution. An election requires the government to give freedom and liberties to all parties and candidates. The attention of the entire world is upon the country. The community in which elections are taking place develops a specific psychological state which is not the same as others outside this community. The powers of the current government are curtailed during an election period as they are considered a party themselves. This is the reason that the election environment is considered as the most suitable environment for the Velvet Revolution. In past Iranian elections, the enemies usually promoted the boycott of elections. American and European media used to incite the Iranian community to boycott the election. The European and American media usually plays the role of the opposition during an Iranian election. However, this year they covered and promoted Mir Hussein Mousavi as if he was fighting elections on behalf of US and Britain. A Velvet Revolution relies on the power-hungry elements which are present in every nation. These individuals are willing to do what it takes to get power. The current government of Pakistan is a good example of power-hungry elements that are willing to do anything to gain and retain power. They love to become presidents, secretaries, and get other lofty titles. Even religious individuals are not immune from this disease. Imam Ali alayhi salam said, "Beware of lapses by scholars and seek refuge from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala." Imam alayhi salam was asked to elaborate further on these faults and lapses, and he replied, "The lapses of a scholar are when he likes that he should be surrounded by people. He likes a big audience, devotees, students, and large number of people welcoming him. When this liking towards people gets developed, then this is the lapse of a scholar. When a scholar gets infected with such a disease, then you should seek refuge from such a scholar." The Velvet Revolution requires power-hungry people to succeed. And in Iran, the enemies recruited and trained these from various walks of life and social classes. There was also an abundance of financial support from America and Europe for the success of this plan. In addition to America and Europe, some Arab states also invested very heavily in the current elections. They tried this model previously in Ukraine, Georgia, Kazakhstan, Czechoslovakia, and recently in Lebanon, where, for example, many Lebanese Christians living in USA and Canada were given free tickets and trips to vote for the candidates who were friendly towards the West and the Zionists. The opposition candidates in Iran had access to unlimited funds to execute the Velvet Revolution. The most important and fundamental role in a Velvet Revolution is played by the internal and international media. Unfortunately, many of us get overwhelmed with the media without realizing that media is not a neutral channel. It is a strategic unit just like the Army, Air Force, Marines, Navy, and other units. It is tasked with psychological warfare and public perception management. Anyone who believes that this is just a conspiracy theory should review the Iraqi weapons of mass destruction campaign that was waged extremely successfully in the media. Today, 1.2 million Iraqis are dead. 4 million were displaced from their homes. 4,000 Iraqis were killed in just one day of bombardment on Najaf-e-Ashraf. This is the same Najaf where Imam Ali alayhi salam is buried. The same Imam Ali alayhi salam that we call when we say Ya Ali. Yet even after this and many, many other instances, we seem to take the word of the media as the word of God. We also do not realize that a very large part of the media, though it may have hundreds of different names, is owned by less than 10 companies. So a very small group of individuals have an extremely high influence on setting the policies of the media. This is an old tactic. During the time of Amir Mavia, members of more than 70,000 mosques were used to discredit Imam Ali alayhi salam. Those that get overwhelmed by the barrage of the media today would have been overwhelmed by the barrage of the media at that time as well. I would recommend that you read Stephen Kinzer's book called All of Shah's Men, where he describes the CIA engineered cult that overthrew Mossadegh, the elected Prime Minister of Iran, in 1953. Over 70% of the media articles during that time were written in the United States of America. Mossadegh's parents were called Jews. He was described as having homosexual tendencies,
and many other tactics were successfully executed through the media, all because he tried to go against the monopoly and exploitation by British Petroleum and tried to get a fairer share for the Iranian people. All the intellectuals in our community need to take a step back and ask themselves, has CIA become a nicer organization since 1953? Are they less resourceful now? Is the crime committed by President Ahmadinejad, that is opposing the Zionist regime, a bigger crime in their eyes than Mossadegh's opposition of British Petroleum? Are they on holidays and not doing anything to bring about a regime change in the only Muslim country that refuses to bow down in front of them? When the American government continues to define Iran as the biggest threat, when the Zionist regime considers Iran to be its biggest enemy, do you really believe that their intelligence agencies with their hefty budgets are focusing on regime change in Iceland? And all this talk about them meddling in the Iranian election is a conspiracy theory? Does your mind and intellect accept this answer? Getting back to the media is an integral part of the Velvet Revolution. Its status is similar to that of a controlled room during wars, where the planning for the war is done and all the activists are given instructions. In the Iranian election, this role was played by the BBC, which started their first ever Persian TV channel 6 months before the elections. BBC had played similar role in Ukraine, Georgia, and Czechoslovakia, and was considered the right choice to start a 24-hour Persian news channel 6 months before the election. Four other channels that played a critical role in trying to instigate the Velvet Revolution in Iran are CNN, Fox News, Al Jazeera based out of Qatar, and Al Arabiya based out of Saudi Arabia. These four channels played the roles of deputies of BBC, but the central role was clearly played by the BBC itself. An important tactic for Velvet Revolution is civil and social disobedience. The book by Gene Sharp talks about government employees and private workers shutting down colleges, universities, and factories, or at least working really slowly and making intentional mistakes to cause discord. Another important tactic is to declare that the current government is a failure and repeat it so many times that a percentage of people start believing it. The instigators of this revolution also engaged in fear-mongering, trying to convince the public that the country will perish and people will be deprived of everything, including food. They developed an environment that this is a failed government by using the media, gatherings, processions, and every possible tactic. In case of President Ahmadinejad, the supreme leader and the majority of Iranians have praised his tireless efforts for the Iranian nation and the Muslim Ummah. He sleeps on average for only 2 to 3 hours a day. Iranians have progressed in every major indicator during his term, but facts are not important during this type of a campaign. This perception management campaign is designed to impact those that are not well informed and are easily swayed. Examples of such campaigns are also often seen in the United States. For example, during the time of George Bush the son, the law that was designed to reduce pollution standards, thus increasing the pollutants in the air, was ironically called the Clean Air Act. A percentage of Americans supported the act just because of its name, because they thought it was actually going to reduce the pollutants. Similarly, state tax, which was levied upon the vast states of the richest Americans for many years, was abolished during the time of George Bush the son, through a campaign which called it the debt tax, which was again misunderstood by many Americans. During the Iranian elections, the media tried to prove that the government was corrupt and incompetent. The propaganda was so severe that some people started believing that they may not even have food to eat if President Ahmadinejad gets elected again. Another tactic used by the Western and Zionist intelligence agencies is to brand anyone that is not subservient to the American imperialism as a dictator. Proving governments as dictators and imperialists is an important part of the teachings of Gene Sharp. Every dictator in the Middle East that provides cheap oil to the United States and oppresses his people and is bowing his head in front of the Zionist regime is considered a great charismatic leader in the media. How many times have you heard the Western media talk about the dictator in Saudi Arabia? How many times have you heard them talk about the British King of Jordan, the puppet regime of Hosni Mubarak, or the dictators in Bahrain, Qatar, Kuwait, and countless other nations where the regime is subservient to the United States of America? Yet they branded President Ahmadinejad as a dictator in every possible broadcast. Proving that the current regime is dictatorial is critical to setting the stage to making it a subservient democracy. During the election debates in Iran, the other candidates constantly called President Ahmadinejad a dictator. How can he be a dictator if they can openly call him one on national television repeatedly without any consequences whatsoever? When I was in Iran, I had a chance to take a cab where a taxi driver went on a tirade against President Ahmadinejad and tried to prove that he was a dictator. He also told me that he has told this to everyone who sits in his cab, including the government officials. I asked him about how could President Ahmadinejad be a dictator if he can criticize him so openly and frequently. The taxi driver was speechless. According to the Iranian election rules, the campaign is supposed to last about 21 days. Yet in these elections, the opposition candidates started delivering fiery and incendiary speeches months before the start of the election. It is necessary to mention that there was a course organized in Dubai, which was attended by some core people and their wives. These people played a critical role in organizing and conducting the demonstrations after the election. Some of them are currently in jail. They used tactics which resulted in loss of lives and properties. For example, they announced through Twitter, SMS, and websites that a popular University of Tehran student was killed by the government forces. The University of Tehran students got agitated, and the resulting riots resulted in the martyrdom of multiple Basiji youths. A few days later, the supposedly dead student appeared on TV, declaring that he is alive and has no knowledge about how or why the news of his death was spread by the opposition. In the Velvet Revolution, the selection of color is significant. For example, Ukraine went through an orange revolution where the caps, t-shirts, posters, and banners were all in orange. In Georgia, a flower was declared as the main symbol of the revolution. In Lebanon, the Hariri group chose a green tree as its symbol. In Kazakhstan, it was a red revolution. And in Iran, Mir Hossein Mousavi was assigned the green color. For those who are not from Iran or have not been there, the green color has a great symbolism in the Shia Muslim religion and especially among the Iranians. Imam Ali ibn Musa Raza alayhi salam, who is buried in Mashhad, Iran, has a very special place in the Iranian psyche. The followers of Imam Ali Raza alayhi salam wore green to show their loyalty to him. The Sayyids in Iran wear a green band or green cloth to denote that they are Fatimi Sayyids, and it is a color that is greatly respected. In all cultures, especially Asian cultures, color has a great significance. We look at the color of the food before even tasting it. We look at the color of the tea to determine whether it is fit for drinking. We even use color as a major criteria for choosing our spouses, unfortunately. Nevertheless, there is no denying that color plays an important role in human psyche. Another tactic of the Velvet Revolution is to create a false impression that everyone is with the opposition candidate. For example, many posters and advertisements were released with endorsements from bodies and organizations that do not even exist. In the current elections, posters and pamphlets were printed about how organizations of engineers, doctors, marja'een, ayatollahs, all support Mir Hossein Mousavi. Upon research, it was revealed that the organization did not even exist, and the marja or the ayatollah had not given the statement attributed to them. Nevertheless, when millions of fake posters are printed, they do end up influencing a percentage of the audience, which is the purpose of such a campaign. Having access to unlimited funds from the enemies of the revolution meant that opposition had no limitations in spending money for such purposes. Among the 198 techniques outlined by Professor Jean Scher is registering of false cases against the government and to run popular signature campaigns and then hang the cloth at a public place. This was followed to the letter during the current crisis through Tumar, which is a Persian term for getting signatures of ordinary people on a big cloth, which was then hung from a public place. Mr. Mehdi Karobi, for example, spent 2 billion tumans, that is $2 million, to run an SMS campaign doing the character assassination of President Ahmadinejad. There were approximately 10 million CDs circulated in Iran attacking the character and personality of President Ahmadinejad. They comprised of false accusations against him with the view that if they spread so many lies in such large quantities, then at least a percentage of the people will believe a percentage of the lies. The people will think that, oh, there's so many things circulating, some of them must be true. For example, the CD contained an accusation that President Ahmadinejad has 5 corrupt brother-in-laws and false proofs were provided against all of them. In reality, President Ahmadinejad only has 2 brother-in-laws, so the people mentioned in the CDs do not even exist. Yet a percentage of the public believed it. CIA has used this technique for many years. For example, it released an X-rated film in Indonesia which used a look-alike of the candidate that was against Western imperialism. Many simple-minded Muslims ended up voting for the Western candidate due to this fake X-rated movie. Another technique used by the enemies of the revolution is to award those that oppose the revolution with the highest possible accolades so that they become a respectable national and international figure. Shireen Ebadi is an example of such a person. Another technique for discrediting the election when you realize that your candidate is going to lose is to start announcing that the elections will be rigged. The Supreme Leader, while addressing the Nowruz gathering in Mashhad 3 months before the election, said that some have already started to say that there will be rigging in elections. They had started to create an environment from many months so that they could execute the Velvet Revolution in Iran. This is a common technique in this methodology and was used effectively in other countries. For example, Edward Shevardnadze won the election, but the opposition accused him of rigging the election and started a campaign in favor of Mikhail Saakashvili, which eventually resulted in the regime change. In the same way, Viktor Yanukovych in Ukraine had won the elections against Viktor Yushchenko, but the opposition ran a very effective campaign about the rigging in the elections, and thus the elections were declared void and the opposition candidate was elected in the re-elections. In Iran, the Guardian Council, which oversees the election results, allowed 15 days for candidates to file any complaints, but none of the 3 entered any formal complaints against the elections. They continued to fight their case through the internal and international media and wanted to repeat the model of Velvet Revolution in Iran as well, but by the grace of Allah, they failed miserably in their plans. Another technique that the Velvet Revolution encourages is that the opposition should portray itself as extremely oppressed. Professor Jean Sharp has written that for the sake of presenting yourself as oppressed, even if you have to become naked, then you should do so in public. This happened for the first time in the history of Iran, where a small group of both men and women protested naked in public. The book also describes various methods of protest that are hard to control, for example, keeping your headlights on during the daytime and shouting from rooftops at night. Both of these techniques were used widely in Tehran. Another technique described in the book is to reduce the stature of the opposing candidate by making him an object of ridicule, joke, and taunts. The number of cartoons, jokes, and punchlines spread about President Ahmadinejad during this campaign are so numerous that they have surpassed anything observed in elections in any other country. In addition to the president, there was a vicious campaign launched against Ayatollah Mizbah Yazdi, who is the second most popular figure in Iranian youth after the Supreme Leader. The Velvet Revolution also encourages the opposition to make sure that they can use popular figures such as film stars to persuade the public. In Iran, for the first time in the history of Iran, film stars were brought into the campaign who tried to convince the public about the oppression of the current regime. The followers of Mir Hussein Mousavi raised the slogan, Na Manto Na Rosari, Rehbare Ma Mousavi. Manto is a long coat that Iranian women wear to cover themselves and Rosari is a headscarf or hijab. They meant to say that once Mir Hussein Mousavi comes, this hijab and coat will be removed. Let's look at the various candidates in these elections. There is no doubt that one of the things that is bothering a lot of people in Iran and outside is that some of the opposition figures have had a glorious past. We will address this issue shortly. First of all, the election of President Ahmadinejad after 8 years of Khatami was a big shock for the West and the Zionists. Khatami had taken the nation away from the revolution. According to the Supreme Leader, President Ahmadinejad has once again revived the path of Imam Khomeini Rahmatullah Alayh and has given life to it, and he has brought it back on the right course. President Ahmadinejad's biggest credit is to bring the Iranian system and nation back onto its track. He spoke to the world with the same courage and valor as Imam Khomeini Rahmatullah Alayh and was thus rejected by the world powers. The Zionists, American and European said before the elections that Ahmadinejad should not be re-elected at any cost and that they do not really care who gets elected as long as it's not him. The three candidates that stood against President Ahmadinejad are Mehdi Karoubi, Mir Hossein Mousavi and Mohsin Rezai. Mehdi Karoubi was a companion of Imam Khomeini Rahmatullah Alayh and was the head of the parliament during his time. Mir Hossein Mousavi was the prime minister of Iran during the war when Ayatollah Khamenei was the president and Imam Khomeini Rahmatullah Alayh was the supreme leader. Mohsin Rezai was the commander-in-chief of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps during the time of the war. All three of these candidates have had a glorious past and have contributed towards the revolution during the past years. However, the reason that they were selected by the enemies of the revolution for support was due to the changes in their philosophy during the last decade. For example, Mehdi Karoubi raised the slogan during the election that the laws and constitution should be changed to allow a woman to become a Waliye Faqih, which is a position not supported by our religious teachings. He also said that he will give 50,000 tumans to every Iranian if he was elected. In case of Mohsin Rezai, his services during his years at the Revolutionary Corps are commendable, but recently he had started putting an agenda of Iranian nationalism over the religious rule and law. He accused President Ahmadinejad of giving more emphasis to Islamism and less importance to Iranianism. He declared that the Iranian nation should tread the path of Quraysh and revive Quraysh-e-Kabir, which is the same slogan raised by the Shah. Quraysh-e-Kabir is a Persian figure whose mausoleum is present in Takht-e-Jamshid. Mir Hossein Mousavi was the most credible candidate that the opposition could offer because he had the experience of governance and had a good and successful government before. However, the group that was supporting Mousavi was exactly the same as the one that had supported Khatami during his 8 years. Another personality that must be mentioned here is that of Hashemi Rafsanjani. Rafsanjani played a critical role in supporting some of the opposition candidates and openly defied the Supreme Leader. His contribution to the revolution is significant and he had gone to jail for it as well. However, the Supreme Leader said that although Rafsanjani's services to the revolution cannot be denied, his thought process is different from mine and from President Ahmadinejad's, and that the thought process of President Ahmadinejad is closer to that of the Supreme Leader. Rafsanjani wrote a very insulting and offensive open letter to the Supreme Leader in which he did not even say Salaamu Alaikum. The descent of such personality has caused some doubts even in the lovers of the revolution, especially those living outside of Iran, which was exactly what the enemies of the revolution of Iran were counting upon. They know that Iran is a very powerful military. Iran has a very powerful military, and any direct military attack would unite all Iranians and all Shia Muslims across the world. They chose these personalities that had a glorious past and yet had a lust for power. Let's examine this issue of personalities in more detail. From the advent of Islam till date, the major disturbances that have been developed within the religion have been due to personalities that were, at one time or the other, considered respectable. For example, Muntazari was a big personality in the successor of Imam Khomeini Rahmatullah Alayh. The services of Muntazari towards the revolution cannot be forgotten. The person who suffered the utmost difficulties during the revolution is Muntazari. He remained in jail, he continued his protests and resistance in prisons He was exiled from the country, suffered many problems, his son was martyred, and he had multitude of services which are not hidden or concealed from anyone. But for the same Muntazari, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh later specified that he is not worthy of carrying the trust of this revolution because of certain acts and dubious things that were done by him, where he preferred the interest of his family over the interest of the revolution. Let's take an example of a historic personality whose life was a testimony of truth and justice, and yet he turned later after the birth of his son and the lust for a governor's position. Zubair ibn Awam, along with Talha, had a very glorious life. He was called the Saif al-Islam, Sword of Islam, by the Prophet ﷺ. He was one of the only people, along with Imam Ali alayhi salam, that stayed with the Prophet ﷺ during the Battle of Uhud, when many others ran away for saving their life. Some of us laugh at those who ran away from Uhud. We should consider that they might say to us that, yes, we did run away from Uhud to save our lives, yet you are absent from every Al-Quds rally and from every battle where there is even a remote chance that your comfort and convenience may be threatened. We are confident that you must have run away from Uhud as well, as we do not find you ever standing up to the zalim during your time. You may raise slogans against the Yazid that died 1400 years ago and say bad things to the Fir'aun that died thousands of years ago, but these incidents occur to teach you to condemn and raise your voice against the Fir'aun and Yazid of your time. It is very easy to condemn someone who is not a threat to you anymore, but what about the Fir'aun and Yazid that is killing millions of the followers of Ahl-e Bayt alayhis salam today? But that is a different topic. Coming back to Zubair, he stayed with the Prophet during Uhud. He sided with Imam alayhis salam after the death of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and was actually in the house of Imam Ali alayhis salam when some people came to burn the house of Bibi Sayyida alayhis salam. He was the only person that got out with a sword to fight with all of them and was beaten to unconsciousness. During the vote for the caliphate, he was the first person to withdraw in favor of Imam Ali alayhis salam and said that Ali alayhis salam is my amir. He was trusted by the Ahl-e Bayt alayhis salam to the point where Bibi Sayyida alayhis salam told Imam Ali alayhis salam that it might not be possible for you to execute my will under the current circumstances. I can make Zubair the executioner of my will if you want. Imam Ali alayhis salam said about Zubair that Zubair has always been with us, but when his son Abdullah ibn Zubair grew up, he got his father to go on a different track. The same Zubair who was a shield for the Prophet ﷺ and for his Ahl-e Bayt alayhis salam, the same Zubair whose life was so glorious till his son was born, later got infected by the lust of power and the love of his son, and was instigated by the Amir Mavia, who assured him that he will give him the power to go against Imam Ali. His disease increased to a point where he played a critical role in starting Jang-e Jamal against Imam Ali alayhis salam. The same Zubair that had done so much for the Ahl-e Bayt alayhis salam turned against the Ahl-e Bayt alayhis salam for his family and the governorship of Kufa al-Basra. Imam Ali alayhis salam reminded him of the hadith of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and Zubair left the battlefield but was killed by some individuals. Imam Ali alayhis salam expressed great sorrow at his terrible end and stated, "How bad has been your end, even though you led a glorious life." Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi first prepared his will and later changed it to include some sentences. One of the sentences he added later was, "I have appreciated and praised many persons in my life because their activities were good, but you should not go by my appreciations. You should look at everyone's current situation. You should look at everyone and see what he is today. Where is he standing today and what is he doing today?" Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi also asked us to be obedient to the Waliye Faqih. For us, the haq is very clear. Anyone who is obedient to the Waliye Faqih is respectable to us. Anyone who rebels against the Waliye Faqih is not someone we can respect, irrespective of their past contribution and present titles. Our axis is Vilayat. If the president remains, if Iran remains, but God forbid, if Vilayat does not remain, then we have lost everything. And if everything gets sacrificed, but Vilayat remains, then we have gained everything. Getting back to the present elections, in terms of numbers, 85% of the registered voters in Iran cast their ballots in this election, which is a record by any standard. Out of the 40 million votes cast, 24 million were given to President Ahmadinejad, 13 million to Mir Hussein Mousavi, 700,000 to Mohsen Rezai, and 300,000 to Mehdi Karoubi. The Supreme Leader said in his sermon that Iran is not Georgia, and it is your misunderstanding that you should consider Iran as Georgia. The success of Velvet Revolution needs a specific atmosphere. It is not successful everywhere. It can be successful in places where governments are imposed from outside on public and do not enjoy popular support. President Ahmadinejad is extremely popular in Iran, and this is a well-known fact to the learned people in the West as well. For example, I quote from the Washington Post, which unfortunately is considered more reliable to some in our community than the word of our Wali-e-Faqih. This article was published in the Washington Post on June 15, 2009. The election results in Iran may reflect the will of the Iranian people. Many experts are claiming that the margin of victory of incumbent President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was the result of fraud or manipulation. But our nationwide public opinion survey of Iranians 3 weeks before the vote showed Ahmadinejad leading by a more than 2-to-1 margin, greater than his actual apparent margin of victory in Friday's election. This is an exact quote from Washington Post, not written by President Ahmadinejad or any of the Iranians. The survey reports prior to the elections reveal clearly that Ahmadinejad will win the election with a wide margin. This is because Ahmadinejad has spent a lot of his time in his 4-year tenure in villages and cities outside of Tehran. In the past, the government officials spent most of their time in Tehran, but in case of Ahmadinejad, he spent a very large percentage outside of Tehran working with the ordinary people. A person who is connected with the public in this way, and the public has seen him closely and witnessed his services, has people's trust and confidence in him. Ahmadinejad did not even run an election campaign. In fact, he did not even have an election campaign office. It was the people who ran the election campaign for him on their own. He did not set up any campaign office for himself, and neither did he appoint someone to run his campaign, where his opposition, as it was mentioned before, just one of the candidates in the opposition spent $2 million on just sending the SMS messages, and other expenses of the opposition cannot be counted. The election and the re-election of President Ahmadinejad has proved that it is the intention of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that this revolution remains alive, and just as the founder of this revolution, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi, had said that God willing, this revolution will join the revolution of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. This is because the revolution of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam is not an accidental phenomena the way it has been said in our minds, that one day the sky will split apart, trumpet will be blown, and the entire world will change. It is not an incident that will happen. The revolution of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam is a step-by-step process that will happen gradually. Nations will change. Nations will be awakened. And with this awakening of different nations, a time will come when the entire global nation, Ummah, will cry for an Imam, and it will all become one nation. And at that time, the Imam Mahdi alayhi salam will come and take the reins of the Ummah in his hands. This process of awakening by the will of God is ongoing, and rumors which are spread about eradication or weakening of revolution are absolutely false. This attempt at the Velvet Revolution is not the biggest crisis that the revolution in Iran has faced, and it is not the last crisis that the revolution will face. Yet after every crisis, the revolution has continued to grow and spread across the world. Once again, I would like to quote what Ahud Barak said about the re-election of President Ahmadinejad, that this is the worst news that he has heard since he was born. Even if Mir Hussein Mousavi was elected as the president, the supreme leader would not have allowed him to cross certain boundaries or parameters. In Iran, the president is someone who has limited powers. All key policies are decided and executed by the Wali-e-Faqih. If the entire parliament tries to pass a bill and the body of ulamas find the bill is in a contradiction to even a single teaching or hadith of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, then the bill does not become the law and it's scrapped. Quran, the teachings of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam and his Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam are the supreme law in Iran, and it is the responsibility of the Wali Faqih to execute this law. You have seen that within Iran, the supporters of Wali Faqih have protected the leader, whereas the leader has protected the revolution. In the same way, the defense of revolution is essential in every corner of the world. There is a velvet revolution going on within Iran, but outside of Iran, the propaganda against the revolution is severe. Countless attempts are being made to defame the revolution and revolutionary personalities. Even in Majalis, where there is a gathering of Mominin, rather than condemning the Zionist regime which recently killed 1,500 women and children, which demolished 4,000 homes, which has made 5.5 million Palestinians as refugees, and committed countless other crimes against humanity, rather than condemning the United States that is responsible for killing millions of Muslims, rather than condemning the shameless puppets of the Arab world which have subjugated their nations to the Fir'aun and Yazid of today, it has become a fashion of the so-called intellectual Mominin to condemn the Islamic revolution in Iran. There is one country in the world that is devoting its resources to the spread of the religion of Ahl-e Bayt alayhi salam in the world. If you want to discuss Iran, then expand your sources beyond the Zionist and Western media. Otherwise, you are better off discussing the hockey and football games that are a status symbol and are also a sign of your integration in the Western society. Please refrain from becoming a part of the propaganda machine. If you cannot defend the Islamic revolution, then you are better off staying on the sidelines, and it would be something that would be good for your akhirat as well. In Iran, by the grace of Allah, there are countless individuals who support the revolution in every difficulty, and Allah has given them the courage and the intellect to protect the revolution. The responsibility that we have is much more difficult. In Iran, they have established and preserved the system of Wilayat-e Faqih for 30 years now. We have to introduce this concept in our communities. In Iran, they followed the lead of the great leader Imam Khomeini Rahmatullah Alayh. We still have to introduce people to this great personality and how he revived the teachings of the Ahl-e Bayt alayhi salam and applied the theory to the practical circumstances. In Iran, they have thousands of great personalities who have studied the religion for many years. In our communities, we have scholars for dollars who are subservient to the wishes of the management of the Islamic centers and are afraid of speaking the truth for the fear of compromising their lifestyles and livelihoods. The Lebanese, after the Iranians, have been on this journey, and they have stated categorically that all their successes that they have achieved and all the respect that they have received is only due to them being obedient to the Wali-e Faqih. What can we do? First of all, we have to cover this road ourselves. Increase our awareness about Imam Khomeini Rahmatullah Alayh, about his teachings and about the system of Wilayat. We should then spread this message to our families and in our communities. The Islamic revolution of Iran will inshallah ta'ala join the revolution of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. We should do everything we can to defend and support this revolution. The Iranian nation has once again shown proof of their intellect and maturity. The entire world told them to vote for the green flags, but they voted for the person who starts his every discussion with the name of Imam-i Zamana alayhi salam and is not afraid to stand in front of the oppressors, even in the UNO or in their universities. We have to stop getting overwhelmed by the media propaganda. We have to stop suffering from inferiority complex and start following and spreading our faith rather than blindly copying everything that exists in this society. Quran calls every Muslim a seed of Islam. Are you a dead seed that will become part of the soil and lose its identity completely? Or are you a living seed who will sprout out of the soil and turn into a tree? The choice is yours. Please make as many copies of this CD as you can and distribute it amongst your family members and friends. May Allah hasten the return of our Imam and enable us to become his true followers. Wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.